welcome to the Class of Ring Attire podcast. I'm Chris, and Joel's not here this week. He's taken off this week. So I am joined by our special guest, our recurring special guest, Neil. Say hi, Neil.
Hi, Neil.
Shut up.
Could be a good podcast.
Yeah, it's going to be a great podcast. So what's funny is last week we started with the podcast with us apologizing about this new setup that we had at Joel's house. Mm. Now I'm about to apologize because now we got a new setup at my house.
Yep.
So if it's not up to par or, you know, you have some echo issues or something, suck it.
I thought we were blaming Charles.
Huh?
I thought we were blaming Charles.
Charles, sorry. See, this is what happens when you don't say anything. You just, like, you forget about him. I'm sorry, Charles. But
you said
still.
Right there, man.
Still. Suck it. So actually I was thinking, and it's been about a year since you've been on the podcast.
Really?
Yeah, because the last time you were on, it was when I had my downstairs set up with my office.
Yeah.
Which was last summer. Okay. So it's been about a year.
Yeah.
And then I was also thinking that's the last time that me and you actually recorded gameplay for the Irrelevant But Awesome YouTube
page. Okay.
Funny thing, and just this is a, I swear we're going to talk about wrestling here in a second. Aside, at E3, they were talking a lot about the new Madden.
Yeah.
The new Madden has a story mode.
Yeah, I did hear.
So, I feel like that'll be the perfect video series that we can do. Because I always wanted to do one of the weird NBA 2K, I think it was 15.
Yeah.
Thing that Spike Lee did that was horrific.
Yeah.
So, I can't imagine that this is going to be any good at all. So, I... Yeah, so...
That's what everybody wants in their sport games, right?
A story mode. Right. Well, isn't a story mode in a sports game just, you know, season mode? You know, going through the season or career mode?
Yeah, but
that they've already had.
Now you get to play some insert character that they made up for you rather than just playing all the dudes that you already know and love.
Or creating your own
character. Or creating your own character.
And playing that career.
Yeah.
But so this one is
he's
like,
both a nobody and somebody you don't care about.
So you're saying he's playing for the Cincinnati Bengals?
Also, yes.
There you go. All right. So, wrestling. We should talk about wrestling.
Probably.
The only really thing from Raw that I have any interest in talking about is Bray Wyatt, but not for Raw. for Raw reason, because, you know, he had a promo that was very much like, oh, he's not really talking to Seth Rollins. He's talking to, you know, Dirt Sheets and TMZ and all these people that are talking about his private life. And, you know, Homeboy was apparently dating JoJo. So, first off, I'm never one to condone an extra, you know,
married relationship. Yeah, it must be said he was dating JoJo while married to a person who wasn't JoJo.
And I believe they were dating before he was separated. Because he had been separated from his wife for a while.
Yeah.
But when he was dating JoJo, he was not separated. So what that means is he's just following the footsteps of all the top tier talent that WWE knows and respects.
Yeah.
John Cena, Randy Orton.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do to get
going
ahead.
Even further back with, like, obviously Ric Flair, the Dusty Rhodes, and Batista. There's plenty of rumors of a lot of infidelity going on at the top of the. I mean, Vince McMahon himself, come on.
Sure.
Come on. So, really, he was just trying to reach that next level. So apparently, like, this is all coming out because his wife is filing for a divorce, and this is the reason that she's citing.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the news sites are kind of taking off with it. So if you're wondering why Bray Wyatt was so big on this promo about, you know, blaspheming his name and he will, like, come at you or whatever, basically being Samuel Jackson's character from Pulp Fiction.
Yep.
and so if you were wondering why in the world that felt weird, there you go. Because the rest of us were like, oh, we know what he's really talking about.
You know, there's one question that none of the Dirt Sheets are asking.
What's that?
What's Bo think of this?
I
mean, he's part of the family. I would think he had an opinion.
I think it's a safe bet to say that that's the question that nobody's asking. Because nobody cares about Bo.
Classy Ring Attire, asking the hard questions.
It's not that hard of a question, it's just not a question that is worth asking. But that does remind me of we should talk about the Brock Lesnar Samoa Joe.
Yes,
they had their big brawl thing, which was really well done, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Especially just Joe, just not even saying anything, and just kind of getting nose to nose with Brock Lesnar, and then just headbutting the guy.
Yeah,
it reminded me. It was during Samoa Joe's feud with, I believe it was Finn Balor.
Uh huh.
Or somebody, I don't remember exactly who it is, but it's basically they're having a contract signing.
Yeah.
And the other person comes out, cuts a promo, signs it or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Samoa Joe's music, he comes out and just you know, with that look, and he's about to do something, and comes out, just signs it, and walks away.
Yeah.
You know? Now, granted, he beats up the guy afterwards, but still.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were talking about it last week, too. I mean, Samoa Joe, when he is given the opportunity in the stage, can be intimidating like nobody else can be intimidating.
Oh, sure.
And really coming out of that pay-per-view, you know, looking back on it, I don't really can't think of anybody else in that match that I'd rather see go up against Brock Lesnar.
Right, because we've already seen Roman versus Brock.
Yeah.
We've kind of seen Seth versus Brock, but not really one-on-one.
Yeah, not really, but I don't know.
So it would have been interesting to see that. And honestly, I would have been interested in seeing Ray versus Brock or Finn Balor versus Brock. Finn Balor was that was obviously my pick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have been interested in seeing what that match would look like, but the matchup between Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar is like probably the best outcome I could think of.
Yeah.
Out of all of those five all the five guys that was in that match.
Cause like you said, you know, several of those guys we've already seen. And, like, guys like Finn and Seth, like, kind of have this sort of flippy style that I don't think Brock could really do anything a lot that's interesting with. Because Brock is so much more of a brawler style.
Now, granted, like, you know, there was that triple threat at that Royal Rumble. Not this past Royal Rumble, but the one before.
Mm.
Or not before that. I don't know. Whatever the triple threat was with Brock and Cena. It was really like all the Seth Brock.
Oh yeah, that's true.
All of those interactions between Seth and Brock were really interesting. But granted, we didn't see a lot of it because Brock was on the ground. He was out of the ring for most of the time.
Yep.
So it's like they kind of dipped their toe in that.
Yeah.
But haven't really fully explored it. And I'm still interested in seeing that match. But we kind of got a taste for what it was, and honestly, I think a lot of people are kind of, after the whole Goldberg thing, I think everyone is really in the mood for just seeing something different with Brock.
Yeah.
Granted, like, you know, a formidable foe that's, you know, just as big as Brock, if not bigger, is not necessarily new with the whole Goldberg thing, but
I mean, Samoa Joe's bringing a level of talent and experience and match-calling ability that Brock Lesnar has not gone up against in a while.
Honestly, I think this might be potentially Brock's best match since SummerSlam against CM Punk. Because that was an incredible match. It might have, I don't think it ended up being my match of the year, but it was pretty high up there that year.
Yeah, it's definitely a contender.
And
Samoa Joe comes from that same school that CM Punk does. Just, you know, era and that style.
Well, so it'll be interesting to see. Like, I've really been enjoying the build-up between Samoa Joe and Brock. I'm really interested. They've still got a good few more weeks. I don't know the exact date of Balls of Fire, Great Balls of Fire. But, you know, whatever. I'm sorry, it's just so... Which,
for the record, I am totally behind for no other reason than the troll factor.
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean,
JBL touched on it on this past episode of Bring It to the Table that aired after Raw this week, where he was just like, yeah, some fans have just been, you know, kind of taking liberties with our promotional material and making, you know, just interesting art out of it. And really what it is like they're just highlighting what you're already doing.
Yeah, I don't think we can blame the fans for this one.
We're just outlining your already phallic promotional material that you're putting out there. So, again, you called it Great Balls of Fire, balls being plural, so there's got to be more than one, and apparently they're fixated on two.
Yep.
So you're just asking for it.
Yep. And then, you know, you put a just long streak of fire behind the whole thing.
Exactly.
What do you end up with?
Exactly. And it seems like, honestly, at this point, they probably would have been better off if they just went with that weird clip art logo that they originally had when they first announced this. Because it didn't look all that phallic to me. But now all their new, you know, highfalutin, you know, graphic design is just nothing but fallacies.
I really want to be on a fly on a wall for that meeting where that whole thing went down. Just...
Oh, man. Oh, well, I can tell you what that meeting was. It was Vince saying, this will be a great idea. It'll be a 50s theme thing. And everyone being scared poopless to say no. Because, you know, I'm sure people have said no to Vince before. But I have a feeling this was something that he really was, you know, all about. So when he's in that mood where he really wants something to happen, no one has the gall to say otherwise.
Yeah.
I completely am convinced that that's exactly what happened in that meeting. You know, that just, no one wanted to say no.
Yeah.
So, moving on, we've got SmackDown.
Yep.
It was kind of, kind of a tame SmackDown.
It was a go-home show.
It was a go-home show in the sense of, they just wanted me, I just wanted to cut it off and go home. Because, like, nothing really interesting happened.
Yeah, it really did.
Zack Ryder's back.
Which, so, I forgot about him, legitimately.
Well, sure, fine. But, you know, they've had this weird focus on Mojo Rawley on SmackDown these last couple weeks.
Yeah.
But only one match. You know?
Yeah.
And he's barely really been on SmackDown since he won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. The only other time was, like, this really cheesy segment where he was just talking about the legacy of Andre the Giant and how, what that means to him, blah, blah, blah. It was super cheesy and super just, like, you know, just roll your eyes throughout the entire thing. But other than that, we've really barely seen him. So, now, you know, they're bringing Zack Ryder back in, his former tag team partner. And they, you know, they, like they said on SmackDown, they had won their, he had gotten injured in their number one contendership match for the tag team championship. So it was just bad timing. A lot of people are thinking just the way that Zack Ryder was kind of acting. A lot of people are thinking like, oh, he's going to turn heel on Mojo probably next week.
Okay. That's not completely
which would be
crazy.
Interesting because honestly, aside from being Edge's, you know, lackeys for way back in the day, he's never been a heel.
He's always been a face.
You're right. He's never been a heel except for the rare time that he was just a background piece for Edge.
Yeah.
You know, back in the La Familia days.
Yeah.
So, it'll, I think it'd be interesting, and it definitely is a way to kind of rejuvenate Zack Ryder's career.
And clearly, I would love to see Zack Ryder do a good, consistent run. Because he's so often he's been, he shows up for two
kind
weeks and then you never hear from him again.
Kind of start and go thing, and then whenever they do put anything behind him, it's either very limited or he soon gets injured after that.
So I'm
interested in seeing that too. And again, SmackDown, they'll just throw anything at the wall. You know, Jinder Mahal's our champion, so clearly they'll give anyone a chance.
Yeah. I mean, SmackDown, it's kind of funny just how much of a difference the 3 hour versus 2 hour thing makes.
Yeah.
Because SmackDown, you know, like we said, they didn't have a lot this week. It was a go home show, but it still felt like they filled all of the time they had with distinct segments.
It still felt purposeful, like you said.
Yeah.
Because they're not, now if they've had to stretch that for 3 hours.
Yeah. They would be in a rough spot just like Raw is.
Right. I do want to talk, because we are going to get to the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, but there is one thing from the world of wrestling that needs to be addressed that I wanted to get to before we really dove into this, was, you know, I just talked about Okada and Megan and how I didn't know when their next match was going to be, and lo and behold, my dumb self, there was, you know, that weekend was where, if I had paid attention, I would know this, but me and my, you know, WWE-centric world, what do I know? So, Okada and Omega had what a lot of people are arguing was the best match of the year early this year.
Yep.
And some people had called it the best wrestling match ever.
Of all time, yeah.
Meltzer gave it a 6-star rating. It had this giant lore to it. So, you know, when they had their second match, could they live up to it? Could they surpass it?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are saying they did.
Yeah.
I still don't know.
I'm in the same place.
Because I love that first match.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how a lot of it honestly has to do with them reaching the time limit, which, you know, again, it's special because that's something that very rarely happens in Japan. You know, yes. That goes the full time limit.
Yeah.
Let alone when you got the 60-minute time limit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that being a time limit in the first place is unusual.
What I really kind of dug into with this match was, honestly, like, the last couple minutes when they were getting, you know, those time updates mm-hmm. more and more, so the crowd was getting more frantic. Yep. So you got a little more, it's what you want UFC matches to be. Whenever, you know, you get those championship UFC matches that are coming down to the wire, and it's less than a minute left, and, you know, both fighters know it, but yet you see, like, you know, that clearly at that point, you're like, okay, well, this person is probably going to retain, or this person probably has been pretty much leading.
It takes the pressure out of it.
And so the other person really needs to knock them out or submit them, and you just don't see that fire. You don't see that, you know... it's like, I gotta get this done. You don't see that urgency. But with them, you saw that urgency. Now, I don't, like... It felt like they were stalling a little bit those last couple seconds.
Yeah.
Whenever Okada was kind of crawling over.
Yeah.
But, like, that's super nitpicking. I understand.
I mean, to deliver that much energy and that much precision and that much just stuff...
Yeah.
After 55 minutes of wrestling...
On top of legit beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah, pretty serious, you know, strong style wrestling, you know, stiff work for that long, and then being able to do something mm-hmm. that good at the end of it is remarkable and extraordinary in and of itself.
I don't know. I don't know if the solution for me is to watch them, because you watched them both this weekend. Did you watch did you watch them back to back?
A couple hours in between, but yeah, more or less.
Part of me feels like maybe I should watch them back-to-back, but I don't know if that's the solution. Maybe I would, by the end of that second match, I'm just completely, like, desensitized to it.
Yeah, I got there a little bit myself. Okay. Part of it was, I just don't have a lot of experience watching that Japanese style of wrestling.
Sure. Yeah.
So, there was a little bit of just a culture adjustment for me anyway.
Yeah. I was thinking about that, because I kind of, like, gave this to you as homework, knowing that you were going to be on the podcast this week. And part of me was like, is there really anything I should explain to him before?
Yeah. I got it. There was nothing that was confusing, so to speak. It was I'm not used to seeing these things done this way.
Right. And, I'm pretty sure you picked up on they have a 20 count outside the ring rather than a 10 count.
Yeah.
And they count faster.
Yes.
But honestly, beyond that, it's really, like, the same rules.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just, it's, like, little stuff. Like, mm-hmm. the crowd is... at least 50 feet away from the barrier.
Yeah. The crowd is pretty, pretty far away.
And
a lot of that has to do with, like, all of the press and
the guys hanging on the side of the ring with cameras,
right.
You know, being right up there almost like a boxing match or something.
And that's how WrestleMania used to be honest with you. If you look at the older WrestleManias, they would be really crowded. Like, I think the main event was, it was Shawn Michaels versus Diesel, where they did a lot of stuff outside of the ring during that match, and it felt like they were just kind of like just, you know, elbowing their way through all these people and all this press around. Obviously, they've done away with that for, you know, these bigger events, but used to, like, they would have a ton of photographers and media right at the ring.
Hmm.
In that aspect, it feels kind of old school.
Yeah.
You know, that and the thinner guardrails. Because,
the bare metal guardrails, yeah.
Right. And again, that's, you know, the crowd is so far behind, so you don't really need those big guardrails right up there because there's no one there.
Yeah. And stuff like the crowd chants are different and weird.
They're quiet.
And and generally speaking, they're more quiet.
And that's more of a, like, intense concentration thing.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, you know, the Bullet Club, or I guess just the elites part, that you know, supporting Kenny Omega, the way they interact with the match is different. They are constantly talking to him, almost coaching him.
Yeah.
But they're not...
And that's... That,
jumping up on the apron, interfering, all that kind of stuff that you would expect.
Well, I mean, they do that as well.
Yeah.
But for this match, for these matches, because they were also... The Young Bucks were also ringside for the first match.
Yeah, right.
And with also, again, minimal interaction.
Yeah.
This one, I feel like, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, because you just watched it more you know, recently than I did.
Yeah.
But in the first one, there really wasn't any like, run-in or anything.
No.
Like
I mean, they're constantly there on the edge, and they're talking to mm-hmm. him, saying, do this.
Right.
You know, come on. You know, but they're not physically interacting or even threatening.
Sure. I feel like the second one definitely had more interaction with the rest of the Bullet Club.
They came in later on with Cody. That was it. I'd forgotten he was in Japan right now. So.
A lot of people are pointing because Cody apparently because they had a press conference afterwards. When Cody came out and challenged Okada.
Okay.
Because they're about to do their first ever United States shows in California, I believe, next month.
I think the commentators mentioned something like that. Yeah.
So I believe that's going to be like a special match, not part of the G1.
Okay.
Well, very little details have come out about the G1, which usually by now we've got a pretty good idea of what's going on.
Huh.
And basically, just to explain to you, it's basically kind of like a weird, like, I don't know if it's like a round robin tournament thing, but eventually, like, they like gain points to move up, and it leads to the finals, and the winner of that match gets to face the champion at their version of WrestleMania, which is Wrestle Kingdom in January.
Yeah. Right, okay.
So, I'm assuming it's going to come down, like, whoever isn't champion, either Kenny or Okada, is going to win
G1.
Because Kenny won last year, and that's what started.
They'll probably have their big three that way. Because this one, in the sense of the finish, felt like a to-be-continued.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, like, clearly it feels like the story at this point is Kenny's getting a little bit closer, you know?
Yeah.
He's just inching his way to getting to a point where he can beat Okada.
Well, every you know, both of these matches have been such close run things.
Sure.
That he is still a plausible threat.
And Kenny ate a lot of Rainmakers, which is his finisher.
Yeah.
Which is Okada's finisher.
Yeah.
He took a lot of those finishers. And what was funny was, I don't think Kenny ever hit his finisher in the first
match. The one-armed angel?
Yeah. I don't think he ever hit it in the first
one. Yeah, I don't think he did either.
He hit it in this one, but of course Okada rolled out.
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of like a progression as well.
That's true, yeah.
So that's why it's hard for me to kind of, for me personally, to kind of pick one over the other, because to me it's just like the continuation of one long story.
Oh yeah, honestly at this point it's not even that's what it's about. It's the, you know,
I think, you know, at this point, you know, gun to head, I would probably pick the first one.
Mm.
As, you know, because it just, I like, the, you know, the finish was, the finish was a little bit more definitive than this one. I don't like draws, you know, because
that's kind of what I'm saying, is the first one could have been a standalone. Yeah. It could have been a one-off thing, and you'd be satisfied.
Yeah. This because, like, they can't have that finish at their biggest event of the year, you know?
Yeah, right.
But at Dominion, at a smaller venue,
yes,
you know, they can kind of get away with that a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I understand they're thinking that, but personally, I would have liked their first match happen somewhere else and have that end in a draw. Like, have that be their starting point.
Okay.
You know, and then go from there. But I also like the avenue that they're taking. Like I said, it's progression of Kenny is just inching his way closer to being able to beat Okada.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I know the Meltzer and everything, they were teasing what the ratings were about to come out. They might come out, like, right now.
Yeah, before you guys actually get the podcast.
So, a lot of people are joking about this is going to give it a 7-star. Because, again, like, that's the problem when you break your own scale.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like, he broke his 5-star rating system for this match because it was so good. And now, because he kind of, like, you know, in their shows earlier in the week had said that he liked this match more. So we're like, okay, well, you already broke your system to go 6 stars for this match. So for this new match, you're saying it's even better. So it's a 7-star?
Well,
like,
clearly seeing the limits of putting too much emphasis on a number rating.
And again,
it's kind of a wank anyways.
Sure. This is, you know, being subjective about art.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is, like, a music, a song that could be utter dog crap to you, but the other person, like, they think it's the most artistic, best thing in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
It's like,
problem,
you know,
the problem with that is, you know, you've got a lot of wrestling fans that takes Meltzer's rating system as fact.
I wonder if that isn't, like, younger people to some degree.
Sure. And a lot of people have pointed out that he has just got a bias towards Japanese wrestling. these days. Which is completely understandable because, honestly, you know, by and large, it's they have the best matches.
Especially well, they have the most interesting things. They have the more innovation than right. what's going on. At least in WWE.
Right, and I mean, that one show, Dominion, if you watch the entire pay-per-view, it had at least three of probably the top matches of the year in that card. Like, they had just finished one of the best matches of the year, and one of the most taxing, and there was no break, they just, because that's how they do it, though, they're like, just one match to the next. Like, as soon as that one ends, they clear everything out, then they immediately start, like, very, like, small video package, if any.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the staging and the intros and everything were not overly dramatic. They
tend to get a little bit more dramatic for Wrestle Kingdom.
Okay.
But it was a little bit more dramatic than their typical show.
Yeah.
For their typical pay-per-view.
But it wasn't, you know, 800 pounds of pyro, long video package, you know, music that goes on forever. It wasn't that at all.
There wasn't a giant, you know, roller coaster replica behind them.
There was no flamethrower.
No Dallas cheerleaders. No people coming out and be like, hey, we're taking women and their wrestling seriously, and then trotting out the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders legitimately after that.
You know, I
just
I had erased that from my memory.
Not that I'm trying to bring that one back up, but and not trying to say that WWE is, you know, promoting a double standard. But I mean, what else do you want from me? So on that note, we should dive into
go into the card.
Joel isn't here to make his picks, so everyone should probably tune in to or go to Inside Pulse this week to see the Trash Ring Attire open, and that should post Joel's picks.
Make it official.
We should get you on to that.
Okay.
The Trash Ring Attire guys, they keep score throughout the entire year.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, you get, or at the end of the wrestling year, which is WrestleMania,
liturgical year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here, I was thinking you were about to say a bad word.
Oh.
And I was like, classy, dude, classy.
No. I've been good so far.
I'm proud of you. Okay, so Money in the Bank is this Sunday, which we will live tweet. Follow us at CR Attire.
Plug.
Yep. And so we'll start with the Women's Championship match, Naomi versus Lana, which is, so again, surprising.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I was not expecting Lana to go full into being a full-on wrestler like this. But
well, see, here's the thing. She still hasn't.
She's
been training at the Performance Center. She's been doing, like, the local NXT Florida show, like, live events. Not on NXT, but, like, you got the touring NXT that goes around the country, around the world, and then you got the local ones, which is more for, like, the, like, actual people who are, not actual people, but the actual,
developers.
And a few of the bigger names will stick around for, like, a couple shows here and there.
Okay.
But she's been, you know, sticking to those kind of shows. So she has been getting ring time.
Okay.
But not on the main...
Yeah, not camera ring time, because that's another thing.
She literally showed up last week and was like, I would like a title opportunity. This is a land opportunity. Shane was like, no. Naomi was like, yeah, sure. And Shane was like, yeah, sure. She's like, yeah, whatever. He's like, okay.
And Lana didn't even come out, like, this week in ring attire or anything. She was just in another evening dress.
Same as last week.
Yeah.
Same as last week.
So, I don't know.
And everyone's like, well, maybe she's really turned over a leaf. That finisher felt pretty crisp. And I'm like, and a lot of people were like, well, so was the spear and the jackhammer with Goldberg. And
yeah.
That's really all he had.
Yep. So
I don't think we're going to have lightning strike twice. Obviously, I'm referring to Jinder Mahal winning the last year. I don't think we're going to get that scenario here.
Yeah, I just can't see it either. I don't think the smart money's on Lana, but, you know.
No, I will say they will probably have her be a little bit more competitive than we're expecting. Because everyone is assuming just, you know.
That's fair.
Naomi's just going to bulldoze over. Lana's probably going to be a little bit more game than we're assuming she's going to be.
Sure.
Whether or not she can actually hold her own on that, we're going to see. So it could potentially be a train wreck that lasts way too long.
It might be booked as she can actually go.
And then they find out, oh, right, she can't.
Yeah.
Or she could. We don't know. She could come out there and just be the next female Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
For all we know.
Impress the heck out.
I've literally have seen nothing. Like, the only match she has been in on WWE was part of, I believe, a 12 Diva. They hadn't changed them yet. They literally were about to.
Oh.
They hadn't changed them yet. 12 Diva match at WrestleMania in Dallas on the pre-kickoff show.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I believe it was after that was when they made the announcement they're switching them to just regular superstars. They were just calling them women.
Just go out with a prove why we're not going to do the Diva thing anymore.
I believe. Unless, I think Stephanie had said, like, put out an article at some publication, like, that morning or something. Okay. Either way.
Anyway.
That her, she had a 30-second spot in that 12 Diva tag team match.
Yeah.
That's all the ring time we've seen. And again, she didn't disappoint. She knew, like, it's like she knew her role in that match, and she played it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's saying that she can carry her own in a championship match.
It is for the championship.
Honestly, this could just be a way to keep Naomi on the card and visible on a SmackDown pay-per-view.
Especially when they're going to have the women's tag team match.
Or the women's...
Women's. Yeah.
So it really is just a way, like, because honestly, I don't know who else they would have put on this. Because I was thinking about that, like, before this happened. I was like, who are they going to have Naomi... Like, is Naomi just going to be off?
Yeah.
Because they've got their almost their entire division on this Money in the Bank match. So, really, this is kind of the only way they could go, unless there's another female on the roster that I'm not even thinking of.
That suggests the idea that Lana's not going to be a serious, like, in the title picture kind of wrestler for the most part. More just a...
I mean, this... Really, you could look at this, and I can't remember if we talked about this on last week's podcast, but essentially this is, it's feeling like kind of like how the championship matches at Royal Rumble used to feel, at least a couple years ago, when you would have a guy who normally wouldn't get that opportunity, but since everybody else is in the Rumble, they would give this guy a chance at the championship, which 9 times out of 10 was Dolph Ziggler. There was one year he was in that spot against Edge, and then that next year he was in that spot against CM Punk.
Yeah.
But this could just be like, let's just, we don't really have any other options. All of our other females are in this other match, so let's just see what happens and put her in this position. See how she handles it. I will say, I do like on SmackDown this week, whenever Lana came out, a lot of people were chanting, "We want Rusev."
Yeah, I noticed that.
That was a nice, because Rusev had said. He had said, because him and Lana had moved over in the shakeup.
Yeah.
And then, like, a couple weeks later, he put out a tweet that said, "I demand a championship opportunity, or a championship match at Money in the Bank, or else I walk," or something. And he, you know, that's the only way I'm going to show up on SmackDown or something like that.
Yeah.
And clearly, this was before they made plans with Jinder Mahal.
So
the clue was got swiped.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah. I mean, from what I hear, he's ready to go, physically speaking.
Sure. There's a few people like that, apparently. But I'm saying Naomi's going to retain.
Yeah, I don't think there's really any reason.
Unless this gets super dark and Rusev comes out and, you know, interferes on behalf of Lana. Because, honestly, that would be kind of full circle, because Lana used to do that for him.
Yeah, that's true, but
I'm still saying Naomi's gonna. It's like, it's really the safe bet at this point.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go ahead and skip up to the tag team match for the tag team championship with Usos versus New Day.
Mm-hmm.
Strong money is on New Day.
You think so?
Absolutely. God, it's the New Day. It's the most over thing in WWE.
So yeah, it's the
being
New Day.
Off for
they're
like
over
a month or two. Yeah,
but like, do you think it's too soon to just move them right back into another championship?
Probably, but I could see them doing it.
They still sell merchandise, so might as well, I guess.
There's a variety of different ways that they can go about this. But honestly, I just knowing the just previous track records of, like, you know, how they've booked New Day in the, like, for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I'm just going on the safe bet.
That's fair. I think I'm going to pick the Usos, and because
their day one is H. That's still my favorite Fashion Police line.
So they have this thing on SmackDown this week of Fashion Police and new faces versus heels, basically.
Yeah.
And I could really see that rolling into New Day is winning, and then interference and Usos retain. Yeah. And then it goes into SummerSlam, New Day wins, and SummerSlam.
Sure, like...
Yeah, and then they kind of take a reign for a little while.
Yeah. I'm just really just going with the safe bet at this point.
Yeah, okay, well... All
right. Next, we're going to go with the... We'll go with the WWE Championship match.
Okay,
Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton. This is honestly where, if we were to get any sort of Rusev run-in, and it's not something that's being rumored or anything.
Yeah.
I'm just coming to my own conclusions.
Uh-huh.
This would be the part where Rusev comes in, costs Randy Orton the match.
Yeah.
Makes the complaint that I was promised this match, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then gets inserted into some sort of triple threat situation down the line.
Yeah. But Rusev's still maintaining his status more or less as a heel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or turn a face. I honestly...
Because, like, he's at that point where they could probably turn a face and get away with it. I mean...
Sure. I don't exactly know what his... Like, clearly it would have to be some sort of
like what change in his character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he just goes full-on pro-USA versus Jinder Mahal, that'll be amazing. You got the guy who is of Indian descent, but he's from Canada.
Yeah.
Going up at the guy who is
actually being from Bulgaria.
Yeah, being pro-USA. Russia,
but now he's going to be pro... Yeah.
Yeah. That would be an interesting dynamic.
Can I just say that I'm, like... really come around to Jinder Mahal being champion.
I will say this, he's carried himself incredibly well.
Yeah.
Like, I really loved the first SmackDown after he won, where he had his big celebration, had, you know,
yeah.
Just this giant celebration with all these people. I really enjoyed just the pageantry of it.
Yeah.
They've changed up his entrance.
Yep.
Has a much, you know, much more epic look to it.
Yep.
I'm digging how they're doing this. They're making him seem more legit than what he really is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, let's call a spade. He won due to shenanigans.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, like, his promo work has been pretty solid. It's
been pretty good. And also on Talking Smack, he was on Talking Smack for the first time since he won this week, and he was disgruntled because, like, why wasn't I on sooner? I'm the champion now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and his promo work there as well was also, you know, pretty impressive.
Yeah. And the scenario you just outlined with him versus Rusev and sort of the goofiness of it.
Yeah.
You know, Jinder Mahal, like, it's different, right?
Yeah.
Like, how bored was everybody with Randy Orton as champion?
Like, I mean,
what,
the same level of boredom that we always are with Randy
Orton. That's exactly right. And like, Jinder Mahal is, oh, there's new things happening. I don't know where this is going to go. Now I'm interested. I mean, the only thing that bothers me is the steroid thing. Like,
so. Well, I mean, that's quite a claim to make. A lot of people have, you know, made claim but it's mostly just blind speculation.
Yeah, obviously nobody's running a blood test here.
Right, like, the guy could be legit just, you know, working his butt off.
But I don't have the faith in the WWE to not overlook it.
All means, they are horrible people.
Yeah.
The people who run WWE, Vince included, they are, the worst.
Yeah.
I'm not making any bones about it, but I also don't want to undercut any sort of, like, any of the hard work that he's made.
That's fair.
That may or may not be legit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the guy.
Yeah. It concerns me. Let's put it that way.
All I know is the guy came back. Like, after he got fired from WWE, he came back and he's looked incredible.
Yeah.
Impressive. So I'm going shenanigans, Jinder Mahal keeps the championship. So I don't know. Because it's one of those things where if Rusev comes out and beats up Jinder Mahal, that means Jinder wins by DQ.
Yes.
You know, either way, I'm going to say through shenanigans, Jinder Mahal wins, retains.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. Like, there's no reason to put it back on Randy at this point.
God, no.
And
this would, even if Rusev doesn't go straight after the championship, you've got something for Randy to do.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately probably better.
Like, the Singh brothers are already there anyway, so, like, shenanigans is such an easy route to go.
Oh, sure. Not like he needs Rusev.
Yeah, right. Even if Rusev doesn't show up at all, he's still plenty of room for shenanigans. Yeah, I'm going
since we're making predictions, how close do you think Randy Orton is going to get this time to killing one of the Singh brothers? Because he came pretty close.
That look on his face is the most emotion I've seen on Randy Orton since I've started watching.
You're not wrong.
That actually made me like him a little bit. Just that
it's like, oh, he is a real person.
Yeah, he's a human. Oh, okay.
Okay, so now we're going to go to the women's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
That is Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Natalya, Tamina, Carmella. Personally, it comes down to two people.
Yeah.
For me. And that's Carmella and Becky Lynch. Charlotte honestly feels like she's too good to have Money in the Bank. Yeah. Like, she's got too much more. Like, she doesn't need that.
Okay.
Honestly, I feel like she's just going to go into the next championship match at the next pay-per-view against whoever the champion is. So it doesn't really matter if she has the briefcase or not. Mm. Natalya is boring and obnoxious. Tamina is boring.
Yeah.
So there's Becky Lynch and Carmella.
Okay, that's convincing.
Yeah. I'm leaning more towards Carmella, to be honest with you.
Really?
Because really, like, Money in the Bank works as if it's somebody that's going to hold on to it for a little while. Money in the Bank works better with heels.
Yeah.
You know, because they're like, oh, they're taking a shortcut, even though it's part of the rules.
Yeah.
So, and Carmella is someone I could see holding onto the briefcase for a little while and probably, putting leopard print on it.
Money in the Bank seems something like the actual briefcase seems like something you put on somebody who's got, like, a feisty, kind of unpredictable kind of character.
Sure, and that's Becky to a T.
Yeah, but I mean, Carmella, too.
Yeah, right, and that's why it's come down to those two.
Yeah, right.
See, my thinking is, if it's somebody who's going to cash in, almost immediately, then Becky. If it's somebody that's going to hang on to it for a while, which I think that's what it's going to be, is Carmella. Because they just got that brand new white, white Money in the Bank.
Well, and
briefcase, so they're going to show it off.
They probably want to take time and explore what they can do with a Money in the Bank briefcase on a female wrestler.
Yeah, so I've been leaning towards Carmella, but those are the two that it kind of came down to for me.
I didn't have a good answer for this one, so I'm just going to go Becky Lynch.
Right, and honestly, the field seems kind of open for both matches, and that's a really good thing.
Absolutely.
We all hate it when it's predictable.
Yes.
I feel like it's leaning towards Carmella because honestly, I don't think they have a plan for whoever wins.
Yeah.
So they're going to kind of like draw it out some.
Yeah, just kind of punt for a little while.
Right. It's kind of like what they did with Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins. Yeah. Like, they didn't really have a plan when those guys won it. So they just kind of had them hold on to it for a while until they finally figured out something. And then Seth Rollins, it worked out perfectly. And as for Dolph Ziggler as well.
I mean, it was good when he cashed in.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we're going to move on to the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. And that's Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, and Shinsuke Nakamura. First things first, Shinsuke's not going to have that briefcase with his entrance. So I'm ruling him out just on that alone.
Fair.
Kevin Owens, I don't feel like he needs it. Same goes for AJ Styles.
That's true.
I could see Kevin Owens being, like, the braggy heel that's holding the U.S. belt and the briefcase.
He would know how to handle it.
Right. Just like, I think Seth was doing it as well. I think there was a time where Seth was a U.S. champion and... I don't know. I could remember. Dolph Ziggler, I don't feel like they want to... really put any momentum behind him anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been around the championship for a while.
Right.
But hasn't really ever been a credible...
Right, and especially lately, it's just like, I feel like they're just throwing him in this match because, like, don't know, we don't really have anywhere else to put him, and he's good with ladder matches.
Yeah, he'll be good in the match.
Right, so let's put him into this.
Yeah.
So again, it comes down to two people in this, and that's Baron Corbin and Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
If I had to predict how WWE is going to do it, I'm going to say Baron Corbin.
Yep.
But Sami Zayn could do...
Sami could do a lot of work with that.
Right. And he's a guy that WWE seems to struggle with finding
him...
What
do we do with
him? Right, consistently.
Yeah.
If he's got this briefcase that gives him something consistently. But again, you know, if it's a... you always go back to that... I don't want to say rule, but that thing of, like, heels... If do better with the Money in the Bank match, the longer they hold on to it. Now, granted, you have heels that are so good that they eventually turn into faces as they're holding the briefcase.
Yeah,
like Ziggler.
Yes.
And to a lesser extent, Seth Rollins. So,
I have a hard time imagining Baron Corbin carrying that briefcase around and doing interesting promos with it.
That's why I think Baron Corbin's going to win it and probably cash it in sooner than later.
Ah.
Right. I would think, because WWE's always had kind of this rule where they don't like two Money in the Bank winners holding onto the briefcase for very long at the same time.
Okay, so this goes to your theory of the women's match one hangs around for a while.
Right, and this one is something they're going to do more immediately. And they have been kind of like cautiously pushing Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
You know, pretty steadily, you know, since the beginning of SmackDown Live.
Yeah.
And again, he's held his own promo-wise. And he does all right in the ring. So, I don't really have as many complaints. You know, he started wearing a shirt so we don't see his dirt belly. So, that does pretty much take care of all my complaints.
Yeah.
Again, like, Sami Zayn... but then again, I could also see Sami Zayn cashing in pretty much immediately.
Yeah, as the that seems more of a face thing to do, is to take the... In this first chance you get, go ahead and cashing it in.
Right. Unless you do the John Cena thing, which is be a Boy Scout about it and announce, hey, next week I'm going to use this opportunity to challenge CM Punk for the championship.
Yeah.
But hopefully that won't happen with Sami Zayn. But, and again, if they're going to do it that same night, I could see... Sami Zayn winning Money in the Bank. Jinder Mahal and Randy Orton just annihilate each other for a while.
Yep.
Rusev comes out, takes out Randy Orton.
Yep.
Then Jinder Mahal, and I'm guessing the Singh brothers have already been dismantled at that point.
Yeah.
You know. Then Sami Zayn coming in, cashing in on Jinder Mahal, and then you got a Jinder Mahal Sami feud while Randy and Rusev are feuding.
Yeah.
You've got that. So that's if they want to do it immediately. I feel like knowing WWE and the kind of the way that they've been going with Baron Corbin, I feel like he's the more likely winner here. Honestly, I feel like that's the reason why SmackDown even has the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, to be honest with you.
Because
there's no reason to not give this to Raw. Because it's one of their bigger marquee pay-per-views.
Yes. Yeah.
You would think they would give to Raw first because they're always Raw-centric, you know, Raw first.
Right.
You know? So I feel like this is kind of the only reason that SmackDown even has Money in the Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Because from what I understand, they're going to be switching it off every year.
That makes more sense.
Although I still think it should be a joint.
Yeah.
No, granted, you know, I can only complain so much about that because the...
Gives room for the women.
Exactly. And them getting their ladder match. So out of that, you know, weirdness comes a good positive outcome. So... But yeah, I feel like Baron Corbin probably is the shoe in for this.
Just to be different, I'm going to go Sami Zayn. But yeah, I don't really have a great answer either for this one. So.
That's why I know you're the perfect guest for a podcast. I don't have a reason for it. I'm just doing it. Okay, so while we've got a quick minute, let's talk about what is making us happy.
Okay. You want to go first?
I will let you go first because you've got something for this because I said I had something for this, and then I blew that in the first 5 minutes of the podcast. We're talking about Madden. So, But no, I do have something.
Mine's a small thing, but somebody posted online a link to a YouTube channel.
You had sent it to me, but I haven't got a chance to
watch it. Oh, you haven't watched it? Okay. I was just curious. But it was a pair of drag queens and one of their friends, who's a wrestling fan, watch pay-per-views and review the wrestlers and the matches.
Are the transvestites, are they wrestling fans? Are they just completely green to this?
One of them plays it like they're completely green, but it kind of like...
You can tell that they kind of...
Every once in a while they use some lingo, and it's like, they might have just got it.
Might have dipped their toe in it.
Yeah, and then the other one seems like they're kind of aware of what's going on. And then there's a guy who sits off to the side and, like, interjects things, saying, okay, this is actually what's going on, or you guys are forgetting about this, or you don't know about this thing that's happening in the past.
So what is it called?
So the group is called the Nobodies, which is not really Googleable, but if you search, if you just Google Drag Queens Review... pay-per-view, you'll find it.
Right, okay.
They do. But it's funny because somebody pointed out that if there's one thing that unites smarks and drag queens, it's being super, super smug and snarky about things.
that's the wrestling community to a T.
Yeah, but like just them just sitting there and just sniping at every little thing like mocking them and just...
They fit in perfectly.
Yeah, and then just like the huge kind of like show, you know, and fashion and everything.
To be honest with you, long history of cross-dressing in wrestling.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah.
Why haven't these communities intersected more?
Right? But just
we're
like...
kind of made for each other.
The pageantry of wearing ridiculous clothing and going out and like showing yourself off and playing this weird character.
That's
like,
cool.
Yeah, like I... Actually, genuinely enjoyed it.
I really need to watch it.
And they've only done two. They did Extreme Rules and Payback.
Oh, boy, did they pick a good starting point.
Right?
I guess what's making me happy is tomorrow, me and my sister are going to go see a Muse concert in Charlotte.
Nice.
And that's my fourth time seeing Muse.
Yeah,
I think my sister's been three times. She wasn't able to go to the last time I went. This is the first time they've been in at least... 2-3 years to North Carolina.
Yeah.
They kind of went through their whole tour, their last album, and just bypassed us. But now they're doing this weird, like, short amphitheater tour.
Okay.
So, like, they're literally just, you know, touring at these amphitheaters over the summer. So, maybe that's what they had planned all along, and that's why they didn't make a North Carolina stop. I don't know. Either way, I'm seeing them tomorrow, and that is super... I'm super excited about that. Yeah. And... they're the best live band ever. And yes, I did see U2. Still, Muse is the best live band ever.
Yeah.
Our friend John still gives me crap for going to that concert and leaving early. Because, like, that was Muse's first big gig in North Carolina because they were opening for them.
Yeah.
And that was my first opportunity to see them live.
Yep.
So that's the reason why I went. And I'm not that, I don't really care about YouTube. Like,
yeah,
yes,
it's
YouTube. It's YouTube. I get it. There's The Edge. Excuse me. Sorry, wrestling fans. The Edge. And there's Bono. I saw them both, and I saw them play at least like 10 songs. I think they got halfway through their set, and then me and my sister were like, yeah, we got a long drive.
Yeah.
Let's just go.
If it was 1997, okay, maybe. But like.
It was 2000. We were still in college, so it was like 07, 08, maybe?
Yeah. So like. Who cares at that point?
Exactly.
No, so, I'm with you on that.
I saw Bono sing, what was it, Elevation or whatever? Their mid-2000s hit or whatever.
Yeah.
Then a couple other hits, and then I was like, all right, cool. And then I also listened to them as we walked to the car.
Yeah.
Because it was at the NC State's football arena.
So it was a big
outdoor thing. So it was quite a walk to get to that parking lot. So I heard quite a bit of the set. And honestly, I feel like we were towards the end by the time we got to the car. So, but yeah, I'm super excited. This might be my fourth time of seeing Muse. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of fandom they've got in North Carolina over the past 3 years. Because honestly, like, they haven't been... selling out arenas too well, like they did one in Raleigh. Mm. They closed off the top again, and even what was there didn't seem those like the pit itself was packed.
Yeah,
everywhere else, eh. And then Charlotte was the last time they went, and I went with our boy J Roll.
Yep.
And they, again, they closed off the top, and we actually, that's where our tickets were, so we got to, you know, move down.
Okay.
And it just didn't seem like a, I mean, maybe a bigger crowd than Raleigh, but still not a huge crowd. A lot of Twilight fans.
I remember you saying that.
That hasn't died down. Right, it did really? A few years ago. Maybe we'll you know,
we'll find out.
I'll find out tomorrow. I'll report back. All right. Until next time, you can. This is where we struggle because I have to do all of this by myself. And this is usually where Joel comes in to plug everything. You can follow us on Twitter, where we live tweet pretty much anything, anytime that there's something wrestling related that's live tweetable.
Yep.
And you can follow us at CR Attire, where we, you know, we'll talk about wrestling and stuff. And if you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to bring up on the show, because this is smoother because it's usually my line, you can send all your thoughts, questions to our email. That's classroomingattire@gmail.com. And we are on iTunes. You get every episode automatically to your phone, if you've got an iPhone, or to your computer. It's the best way of keeping up with us. Go and just look for Classroom Ring Attire on iTunes. And while you're there, we would love it if you could write a review and leave us a rating of
5 stars.
Thanks. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that gusto.
Yeah, well, you didn't even ask me last time.
No, you're right. You can give us a rating of 5 stars. We would love it, and that would really help us out with, you know, the rating system and all that stuff, the metrics, whatever you want to call it. And if you're listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We would love to hear from you. And we are also on Facebook. It's an easy way to keep up with the podcast, keep up with stuff that me and Joel are up to. And matter of fact, Joel has a play coming up soon, or musical, I should say, coming up soon that he is going to be in. He's going to be one of the top main characters. So if you want more info on that, I'm sure we'll start posting stuff because that's soon. I believe it's the end of June, beginning of July. That's why he's not here, because he's, you know, they're kind of getting into crunch time.
Yeah, I hear those things are pretty intense.
They are. So if you're interested and you're in the area and you want to see a good performance of the producers and you want to see Joel in the producers, then bam, there you go.
The role he was born to play.
Right. So yeah, if that's how you can keep up with us, just look up Class Ring Attire on Facebook. Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.